Hey, it's Mike Halford from the Halford and Bruff podcast. One, thanks for downloading. Two, thanks for listening. Three, why not leave a review while you listen to the podcast? And now, back to the show. Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is Halford, it is Bruff, it is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Sportsnet 650 studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Nephew Dom, how are you?
Long weekend.
Laddie.
Hey.
The Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. As Dom alluded to, yes, it is just about the long weekend. We are going to do everything we normally do on a Friday on a Thursday.
Phone it in?
Yes.
This is not going to be a very good show.
It's a mail it in Thursday, not on a Friday, on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Today we are going to do Ask Us Anythings. Today we are going to do our BCLC Play Now Locks of the Week. We also have a full slate of guests that we need to get to throughout the next 3 hours before we're off for the aforementioned long weekend. We're going to begin at 6:30 with Frank Saravalli. I can feel it now. Things are going to happen. And I know by saying that, nothing's going to happen. But I reiterate, I can feel it now. Things are going to happen. We had our first very significant trade of the NHL offseason yesterday. There are big rumblings coming out of Pittsburgh, coming out of Chicago. Philadelphia met with the media yesterday. So teams are starting to talk and starting to let slip their plans for the next couple weeks. Because remember, a week today, it is the NHL entry draft for Montreal. And then in 2 weeks' time, it is, of course, the start of free agency. So Frank at 6:30, 7:30, first-time guest, a very interesting guest. We are getting Bo Byram's mother, Stacy. Now, Stacy was featured very prominently in the Athletic piece that you've brought up on the air on a number of occasions, Jason, about the really, really difficult journey that Bo and Byram went through with concussions and vertigo and his recovery very early in his NHL career. A time that, of course, also coincided with one of the more stringent times of the pandemic with regards to lockdown. So it made, you know, his mom visiting very difficult and trying to help with the treatment of concussions and vertigo very difficult. A very difficult time.
But here's the good news. Bo and Byram just won the Stanley Cup.
That was the kicker.
And he played very well in the Stanley Cup playoffs. So very much looking forward to speaking with Stacy Byram, who is Bowen's mom. 8 o'clock, Brendan Batchelor will join us. We'll talk a little bit of Canucks. The Lions are in action tonight against the Red Blacks. The Jays, after losing to the Red Sox yesterday, opened their series at home versus Tampa Bay. The LIV Golf Tournament opens in Portland.
What's the name of that place called? Pumpkin Hollow?
Pumpkin Ridge. Pumpkin.
So close.
Ridge. Smashing Pumpkin Ridge.
Got it.
The PGA has the John Deere. We're currently watching Bianca Andreescu at Wimbledon. First set tied at 3. And again, it's Ask Us Anything Friday on a Thursday. So get your text into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650. And Laddie, now it's time to do that thing we do where we say what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
Let the off-season business begin. Big, big deal yesterday in the National Hockey League. I'm sure all of you are aware of it. For those that aren't, Kevin Fiala, one of the more sought-after assets available this summer, has been dealt from the Minnesota Wild in exchange to LA for the 19th overall pick in this year's draft and a defenseman by the name of Brock Faber, a highly coveted defenseman, good young defensive prospect. What's more, ties to the Lando Lakes. He is the captain at the University of Minnesota. So it's a big deal. Fiala, of course, had 85 points last year, a bit of a no-show, and by a bit of, I mean, a huge no-show in the playoffs, but a very talented player. Do you want to jump right into the Canucks takes off of this? Do you want to kind of
Well, sure, yeah. I think we can do it at the same time. I think that's a pretty decent return for the Minnesota Wild, especially considering they were in a cap crunch and they had to do something. Now, there's going to be some Minnesota Wild fans that say, why didn't you trade Dumba instead? Well, they chose to go otherwise. And I think for Minnesota, they might have just been hesitant to sign Kevin Fiala to the contract that the LA Kings We're not forced to sign him to, but that was part of the deal, right?
Sure.
Kevin Fiala was going to get a long-term contract somewhere, and all of a sudden you've got Kevin Fiala signing an 8-year extension.
Yep.
Is that true? With a cap hit of $7.9 million. I wrote these notes out myself, so I knew it was true. It's just a lot of money to commit to Kevin Fiala, although he is a terrific young player. He's just been inconsistent.
Yeah.
You hear these, like, obviously we don't follow Kevin Fiala's game-to-game performance.
I do.
You do, yeah, because you know everything.
I have my Swiss hockey app.
It feels like he's either not doing anything or he's absolutely on fire. And maybe that's just the case for a lot of goal scorers, but for Kevin Fiala, that is him so far. Now, he's still only in his mid-20s. The Kings, just talk about them for a bit, may not be done either. There's some people that expect them to do more, like go after Forsberg in free agency. And it's interesting that they were able to get Fiala because they've got a bunch of young defensemen to the point where they were able to trade a very good young right shot defenseman in Brock Faber to get something. The Canucks have nothing close to Brock Faber in terms of their prospect pool on the right side.
Yeah, the Kings have been stockpiling prospects for a long, long time. And actually, it's funny because one of the rubs with that was that you looked at all these draft picks they've made over the last 5 years, and none of them really panned out to be super elite. So you said, like, did they miss on these guys? But then you realize what the quantity of having good, solid NHL prospects does for you is they become assets. They become tangible money that you can use on the open market. And here, like, they're going to trade away Faber, and it looks like he's going to be a Brock Faber, not the guy that used to work here. And it sounds like he's going to be a good, solid defenseman for the Minnesota Wild, so they get something good in return.
Mm-hmm.
It's no skin off LA's back because they have five or six other guys that project to be a reasonable facsimile of that. So when you talk about them not being done, this is what Wyshynski came on our show yesterday and said. They are at a stage in their evolution where they can put their foot on the gas right now because they made the playoffs last year. They have a relatively small window, I would say, with Kopitar and Doughty, is how much more are they going to be playing at a really high level before they start to tail off. And if you're looking around that Pacific Division and the Western Conference, yes, everyone knows that you're chasing the Colorado Avalanche. But after that, there is pretty wide open with a lot of the uncertain futures. You know that Calgary and Edmonton are going to be good, but you have to step up and compete.
So a lot of Canucks fans obviously wondering about the return that the Wild got for Kevin Fiala. First, here's General Manager Bill Guerin on why the Wild traded Fiala.
Well, I mean, listen, we've been down the road a couple times with Kevin already, and we just know, hey, look, he had a great year, and we knew it wasn't, we just were not going to be able to do it. And we knew that, they knew that, and there's no sense just trying to screw around and trying to fit this and fit that and give him a lowball deal. It's not going to work. So we knew we were going to have to move with it.
So basically, Bill Guerin looked at his team's situation, financial situation, cap situation, and remember, they've got some buyout money. They got some dead money in Minnesota with the buyouts for Parise and Suter. So they're up against it. So he looked at the situation and went, listen, let's not mess around here. Let's face reality. We're not going to be able to re-sign Kevin Fiala. It just does not work for us. Does that sound familiar to a certain situation in Vancouver?
Yes.
Potentially.
Hypothetically, yes.
Potentially.
Yes.
Like, remember we were saying yesterday, we were talking about how it would be nice for the Canucks to just have some certainty in time for the draft on JT Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sitting there going, well, listen, if Jim Rutherford and Patrick Galvin think it's close with JT Miller, like they put something out there and he's put something back and it's like, oh, wow, that's maybe even closer than we expected. Then maybe if you could get JT Miller on a really, I don't want to say team friendly, but if it works for the Canucks, it's going to be lower than a lot of people probably have expected JT Miller to sign for. Then maybe you keep working on that. That seems unlikely to me. What seems more likely is the Canucks are presenting something and then JT Miller comes back with something and the Canucks are like, whoa. That's that doesn't work for
us. Yeah, it's too,
so
big,
why,
too big a chasm between the two sides.
So like Bill Guerin said, why mess around? Like, let's get to business here. Let's start finding solutions. Now, the return that the Wild got, I really liked it. A first-round draft pick and Brock Faber. So that's two high upside guys in that you're going to get a first-round draft pick.
Yeah, 19th overall. So you know where you're picking in the first round.
But now, it might not be a terrific draft.
I mean, here, yeah,
but
I agree.
It's still a first round draft pick where you're expecting to get a pretty significant player with that.
I think the idea here was that they went for quality over quantity. I saw a couple of people allude to that on social media, and I think that's a fair way of putting it. It's that instead of getting this, well, we want a first round pick and we want a prospect and we want a roster ready player. Like, sometimes people just want an accumulation of assets so that it almost looks better. But for this, I'm kind of with you. And I'm also kind of with you that this is a good return for Minnesota, because everybody knew that Minnesota was dealing from a position of weakness. Everyone knew that they have terrible cap problems with the Suter and Parise buyouts next year and the year following. And everyone kind of knew that they weren't bringing Fiala back. Like, it's not a great position to be trading from when everyone knows that you got to deal the guy. So overall, not bad. But now I'm seeing some people say, well, if that's the market for Fiala, that's exactly the minimum that the Canucks should be expecting for Besser. And I said, I don't think you can paint.
For Besser?
Yeah, I don't think you can paint Fiala and Besser contracts and situations and trade markets as anything similar. Yes, their profiles kind of fit if you were going to do, they're both 25-year-old RFAs that need new deals. But outside of that, there's not really a lot of comparables between the two, so I don't think it's very fair or accurate to draw a straight line between the two.
Guys, Fiala and Besser are not great comps. And if you're hoping to get what the Wild got for Fiala, if the Canucks do end up trading Brock Besser, like, you're going to prepare yourself for disappointment just because two main reasons. First of all, Fiala's had a much better season than Brock Besser did. He had 33 goals.
Agreed.
Brock Besser,
85 points.
Did not. And Besser also has this drag of his oversized qualifying offer.
Yep.
So,
it's a big problem.
If you trade Brock Besser without any contract finality, like, let's say you trade him to another team and you haven't worked out a contract extension for him, then that team has to work out a contract extension for him, and that team has to deal with the sky-high qualifying offer. Mm-hmm. I think JT Miller is a better comp for Kevin Fiala in terms of what you could possibly get for him. They're less comparable in their situations and ages. I realize that. But I think the quality of player is closer, at least in terms of how the rest of the league will see it. Fiala does have an advantage in that he's younger, 3 or 4 years younger than JT Miller. But I think Miller's probably a better player. He's certainly coming off a really, really good season. He's also got the fact that he can play center and the wing. Fiala's a winger.
Yep.
So the return there, like, let's put it this way. I will be pretty disappointed if the Canucks don't get at least what the Wild got for Fiala. And that's a first-round draft pick and a high upside youngster like the Wild did.
Right.
Right, that and I think that would be fine. If the Canucks traded JT Miller for what the Wild got for Kevin Fiala, I'd be like, yeah, that's okay. Wow, I mean, you get a first round draft pick, you get a right shot defenseman who's young, and looks like a good one. And then don't forget, here's what people often forget: you got JT Miller's cap space then to go out and get another player.
Sure, that's a big part of this. So you have to understand the domino effect of all of it as you move along. So the Fiala deal in the books, we now sort of sit around the rest of the league and look at what else is going on. Laddie, can you get the Brian Burke clip from the Jeff Merrick show at the ready? I kind of want to turn to this Pittsburgh story because I think it's really interesting in that we could see a pretty significant changing of the guard in Pittsburgh. You know, we spent the better part of the last decade and a half, just expecting the same out of Pittsburgh. Crosby, Malkin, Letang. And two of those three may not be back with the Penguins if talks continue to go the way that they are. So the futures of Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang with Pittsburgh was discussed a couple days ago. We just got the audio now where Brian Burke, who of course is now with the Pittsburgh Penguins organization, went on with Jeff Merrick. What?
I had the audio yesterday.
I know.
You don't anymore?
Well, no, you said we just got it in today.
Oh, okay.
It's like you're throwing me under the bus, Alfred.
Well, I didn't ask for it yesterday. So no one was throwing you under the bus. Okay. You guys are sensitive.
God, you've got a big ego. Yeah. You know what? A lot of people say that you're a pretty humble guy, but actually, it's moments like this that show you that that you think you're bigger than the show.
Who are these people that are telling you?
Many people say.
You're hearing it more and more.
They're wrong.
Erstwhile producer Greg Ballack, who put in the work 2 days ago, found this clip. This is Brian Burke on the Jeff Merrick Show talking about the futures of Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang.
We want to sign both players. Everyone should be emphatically clear on that. We would like to bring both players back, but they got to come back at term and contract dollars that make sense. So we want both players back. They've got to come back with the length of the contract and the amounts of the salaries that make sense. And if not, they're not coming back. And that's what people should be very clear on is not that we're not interested in having them back. We want them back. But they've got to come back at numbers that make sense and don't leave us capped handcuffed. And if that doesn't happen, they're not coming back. So it's very simple for us.
So Burke went on to say that they have had pretty involved talks with Chris Letang, less so with Malkin, though. And I think Chris Letang is obviously their priority there. Just because of age,
sure.
If anything else, Malkin's going to turn 36 this summer, and I'm just really curious to see what he wants, or what length of deal. Because anything more than 2 years, I don't know if it's going to be worth it for Gino. Mm-hmm. I just wonder where Pittsburgh is right now, with the new ownership group, with their, I mean, Ron Hextall's kind of a new GM there. He's
yep.
pretty new GM, general manager there, right? Where do they see this team going? I think what a lot of Pittsburgh Penguins fans are kind of upset about is if they lose Malkin and Letang, what is their team?
Yeah, what are they
like,
doing?
What do Sid's final years in Pittsburgh look like then? That's their concern.
I really wonder if the end game there might be keep Letang and let Malkin walk, because I think you're going to get more out of Letang, mostly in value, because he's like a top pair defenseman, and defensemen are so much harder to find. All due respect to Gino playing down the middle, he's a 2C there. I mean, I think you could fill
yeah,
that hole a little.
Could you?
I think so. I'm talking about one or the other.
With like Pittsburgh native JT Miller?
Well, or Vincent Trocheck, who are both apparently skating in Pittsburgh right now. I want to bring this up because I made the bold declaration yesterday, as we're the Halford and Brough Hot Take Show, that the Canucks won't trade at 15 at the NHL entry draft.
Won't pick at 15. Get your hot take straight.
Won't pick at 15 that they're going to trade back. That's my big spicy hot take. If you can wager on it, get it at play now, bclc.com. I love this because you said in the rumors category of our notes yesterday, and I'm not going to lie, my mind kind of went to the same place, only for the fun of it. I have to admit, I thought about the Canucks bringing in Malkin like they did with Sundin. I, too, have connected the dots. If only because, if there's anyone that better understands what Malkin can bring to a team,
yeah,
it's Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin.
And maybe there's the relationship there. Now, I don't think it makes
a lot of sense.
For who? For Gino or
for
the Canucks?
For anybody,
right.
Really. Like, you bring up...
Well, I think it makes sense for the Canucks.
Yeah, a little bit for sure, but you look at the subsequent note, and I don't know if they'd be able to convince him to go all the way to Vancouver. I mean, that's a major uproot of your family and your life and everything that you've known.
That's the big thing, and also I think if Gino's going to go anywhere, he's going to go somewhere. He's like, I want to win a cup somewhere. Mm-hmm. And listen, there might be people out there that say, well, you could be the piece that helps Vancouver become a Stanley Cup contender. You're probably like, yeah, it's easier to go somewhere else.
He could play with his fellow Russians, Kuzmenko and Podkolzin.
You have a Russia line.
Yeah. That's a thing. It's more fun in a speculation sense because everything's on the table for everybody right now, right? It's silly season.
I mean, I think we were just discussing it in the sense that if the Canucks trade JT Miller, then obviously they're going to have to go out and get another center. Mm-hmm. Even though they would have Petey and Horvat there, you need some more depth.
For sure.
You need to have a roster that can handle losing a center. Like, look at the Tampa Bay Lightning. They lost Braden Point and were still able to hang in there just because Steven Stamkos was able to come and play center for them.
Yep.
So that's the kind of depth you need at center. You know, the Avs were able to survive without Kadri for a while in their Stanley Cup final, and they went on to win the Stanley Cup final. Yeah, I just started thinking, and you know, listen, we have the Matt Sundin memory here, where the way they convinced him to come to Vancouver was they just gave him a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back, a lot of the players like the Sedins will say how valuable it was having him there for just a little bit. Like, don't forget, hanging over all of this, these roster moves that we're going to make, and we're going to plug different players in here. And what if, you know, if the Canucks trade JT Miller, like, who do they bring in? What's their center depth? If they trade Brock Besser, where does that leave them in places? Like, we need to do that. But don't forget that one of the big challenges that this new management group has taken on is changing the culture, and changing the culture of the players, and having them learn, hopefully, what it takes to get to a Stanley Cup final. This is one of the reasons that the Sedins, for example, will be working closer with the players in Vancouver and Abbotsford. Bringing in a guy like Evgeny Malkin could help that. Again, I think this is a pipe dream, but it's fun to talk about just because it's fun to talk about where Gino could possibly end up if he doesn't stay in Pittsburgh, and also what Pittsburgh's going to do if they're not able to keep Gino. He might be one of the most underappreciated hockey players just because he's been so overshadowed by Sidney Crosby in Pittsburgh. That's been Sid's team.
Yep.
But Gino's been there too, and he's been very valuable for them.
Frank Cervelli is going to be joining us in a couple minutes here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. But okay, so we went over the trade that happened yesterday, Fiala to LA, coming over from Minnesota. We talked about the Pittsburgh Penguins and all the rumblings that are going on with departures from the Penguins. I want to mention Chicago. Man, we talk about the changing of the guard in the NHL. It wasn't that long ago, Jason, that Pittsburgh and Chicago were considered two of the preeminent franchises in the NHL. And Crosby and Malkin and Letang and Keith and Taves and everybody else in Chicago. Names escaping me at the moment. Kane, Taves, Keith, thank you. Now it feels like the bands are getting broken up and the party might be over. So in Chicago yesterday, the general manager, Kyle Davidson, met with the media. He said that he wasn't going to rule out the possibility of trading Alex DeBrincat, which I think everybody knows is out there. But he talked about the guys that are untouchable from a contractual status. And two of the big guys there, obviously, are Taves and Kane. And he classified them as untouchable because of their contractual status with the full no move. But he also added in, we will be accepting calls and we're not going to turn anybody away. We are going to listen. I look at this situation and I'm not sure that this happens prior to the start of the season. Maybe it's an in-season deal, but I got to say right now with Patrick Kane, it feels like the perfect storm for him to move somewhere while he's still playing at a really high level and add another chapter to his career rather than play out the string and kind of burn away another year in Chicago. I know DeBrincat's the one that's first and foremost in everyone's mind, but you talk about some of these teams that are saying, can we make the next step? Can we make a push? Can we make a challenge? All these teams that are in contender status, fitting the cap hit under your books would be tough, but it would only be a one-year commitment.
Yeah.
It would be the ultimate intriguing rental. And I look at like the New York Rangers, if they could somehow afford to get him under the cap and reunite him with Artemi Panarin. If you look at a host of other teams, I mean, who wouldn't want to add a guy of that caliber at this stage of his career where it's not a long-term commitment, you'd be only be picking up the last year of his contract, you'd get a motivated player because they've been so bad in Chicago for the last few years.
Yeah, and I think Kane is still at a higher level than, say, Claude Giroux.
For sure.
Who we saw go to Florida and was pretty ineffective for the Panthers. Mike, the urologist from Brockville, with an Ask Us Anything, and it is Ask Us Anything Friday on a Thursday because it's Canada Day tomorrow. Do you guys know why it is so hard to find right-sided defensemen? Do coaches avoid playing defensemen on their offsides more? Are there fewer right-hand defensemen around than previous? What's the deal, guys? I think you hit on two big factors there. Coaches do like to, if you're a right shot, you play the right side. And if you're a left shot, you take the left side. I think that almost started with Babcock.
It's real simple.
I want my right shot on the right side, and I want the left shot on the left side. It's real simple. And also, there's just fewer right-handed players in the NHL.
70% is the official number.
70%
are left-handed.
Yeah, 70% are lefties. And it's funny, I never knew this when I was growing up, but the way they teach kids is you want your dominant hand on the top of the stick, right? So I'm right-handed, and the dominant hand for me is on the bottom of the stick. Mm. And that's why I didn't make the NHL. It's the only reason. Frank Saravelli is coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Are you ready to get fired up for the next game? Nothing helps more than a bowl of Campbell's new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Let me tell you, it's got tons of seasoned chicken, veggies, and noodles all in a tasty, spicy broth. So it'll fill you up and get you fired up. So take your day to the next level and see if you can handle the heat with the new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup.
On a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough for the morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. I should mention, we are now a week away from the 2022 NHL entry draft. It will be live from Montreal on Thursday, next Thursday, that is. NHL draft coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by the Vancouver Giants, the Gigantes. Season tickets are available now. Join the Giants for their 22nd season in the NHL. You can visit them at VancouverGiants.com. Should mention with regards to the draft, on draft day and next Thursday, you will get extended draft coverage courtesy of Sportsnet 650 beginning at 3 o'clock our time with a sort of hybrid people's show / Canucks Central. They will take you through the pre-draft show all the way through the entire first round until the end. And then on day two, Friday morning, Brough and I will pick up coverage beginning at 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, we will basically be draft adjacent is how I would say it. We're not going to be reading out or replaying every single pick.
With the 39th pick, the Ottawa Senators select out of Ruin Noranda. Is that, do they still have a team in the queue?
Yes.
Ruin Noranda? I don't even know a player on that
team. Huskies.
Okay.
How about someone
from
the Memorial Cup
final? He was my favorite Husky.
How about someone from the Memorial Cup final yesterday, Laddie?
St. John Sea Dogs beat out the Hamilton Bulldogs.
Why you got to remind me?
Sorry, buddy. How was it?
What's news?
It hit close to home, I would imagine. Was everyone upset back in Hamilton?
Yeah, it was pretty upsetting. But it's kind of crappy. Like, you win your league, you do so much well, but you lose this short little tournament, and all of a sudden your season is just a disappointment.
The Sea Dogs were rested because they lost in the first round and then fired their coach.
Yeah, they had Gardner McDougal. How do you compete with Gardner McDougal?
Who they brought from U Sports. I did not know this at the time. Yeah,
from the University of New Brunswick. Yeah.
What a hire. What an amazing move.
We had
move.
Lady Mo on his side.
That's true.
What are we supposed to do?
Let's get back to the NHL side.
Frank has not picked up, so we're going to keep efforting him.
Okay. That's good to know.
Efforting him. That is, I've said this before, that is such radio jargon that you hear nowhere else. Mm-hmm. Just say trying to get him. We're just going to keep trying to reach him.
Absolutely not.
I'm going to keep efforting him.
I'm sweating, though, so I would say he's efforting.
I wonder if Frank is currently working on something, if something might be in the mix, because it is, as we mentioned in the first half hour of the show, things are starting to unfold, and we're starting to get more rumblings. Obviously, we had the Fiala to L.A. trade yesterday. You mentioned that L.A. might not be done, that they may be involved in the Philip Forsberg sweepstakes, assuming that he goes to market as well. Do we have Frank on the line now? Is that what you said? Okay, perfect. We will go back to the phone lines. We are joined now by our regular Thursday guest from Daily Faceoff, Frank Saravelli, here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Frank. How are you?
Hello, boys. What's going on?
Not much. We spent the better part of the first part of this show going through some of the markets that are starting to make noise because it has been a little quiet since the Colorado Avalanche were handed the Stanley Cup earlier in the week. But we had the big Kevin Fiala trade yesterday. He goes from Minnesota to L.A. We played some of the audio out of Pittsburgh from Brian Burke talking about the futures of Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang. We also circled back on the Chicago things with Kyle Davidson speaking yesterday saying that he's not ruling out an Alex DeBrincat trade, and we sort of started to speculate on the future of Evander Kane. So that feels like there's a lot in the hopper, Frank. Are you getting the sense that things are starting to heat up as we're getting later and later into this week?
Well, there's a ton in the hopper. The thing is, like, everyone's talking, but not really doing a lot, if that makes any sense. Like,
sure.
The conversations with general managers have been ongoing between them for the last, I don't know, 2 weeks or so. They're kind of doing the dance that's required before the NHL draft, where, you know, they're having those exploratory type conversations and understanding who's available, who isn't, and beginning to get a concept of price before ultimately having like 9 other internal meetings and then pulling the trigger. So it's the usual sort of summer thing for the NHL, obviously a bit delayed this year with the later draft and free agency, but it's certainly ongoing. And a lot of the things that you're talking about we're talking about are exactly the same things that teams are talking about at the moment.
Well, in light of what you just said, I think it's interesting to look at the Fiala trade and what Bill Guerin had to say in the aftermath. Essentially, it was like, we're not screwing around here. We're not wasting any more time. We had a deal. We liked it. We saw it. We don't care that we're trading him in conference. We're just going to get it done. It was actually refreshing to hear him say that, because it was almost like everything else is paralysis by analysis. And Guerin just kind of went and said, we got a deal. It looks good. Let's go get it done.
And I love it. I love the deal they made, too. Like, there is no nonsense with the Minnesota Wild. Like, what you see is what you get. There's no fluff. And part of that's the personality of their manager in Bill Guerin, as you mentioned. But to think that they were able to get a real quality prospect, someone that can slot into their lineup, you know, maybe even as soon as after this upcoming season ends at the University of Minnesota in Faber, you know, a lot of teams see him as, you know, a number 4 defenseman in the NHL. And if you can get a quality piece like that contributing to your team on an entry level deal and a first round pick, 19 overall, in exchange for a player in Kevin Fiala that you have no designs on keeping, like, would not be issuing a qualifying offer because they can't afford to go through the process and go to ARB. You saw the extension that he signed in LA, 7.875 times 7 years, $55 million and change. Like, that just wasn't going to be a neighborhood that the Minnesota Wild were living in with Fiala. So to get that type of return, like, why would you wait any longer? You've got something you like, you believe it's good, and it's a fit. Like, it's a team that he's willing to sign a long-term extension with. Obviously, that was kind of sorted out along in the process to ensure that you get a better return. Like, that makes all the sense in the world. You're checking all the boxes that you need to.
Do you think the Kings were willing to include Brock Faber in this deal because they were worried they wouldn't be able to sign him?
I don't know if necessarily that's it, or if they're looking at their decor. And I think this is really one of the things that Minnesota is going to have to look at. LA is going to have to look at. The Rangers are going to have to look at. Probably the Ottawa Senators at a certain point, and then now other teams with a boatload of draft picks, like the Montreal Canadiens or the Arizona Coyotes, you're not going to be able to keep everyone. So that's, you know, that NCAA factor is part of it, but, you know, you can only have so many players or draft picks in your lineup, in your system, on your 50-man contract list that you have to make tough decisions at some point, and I think Faber is really well thought of, but in this case, probably a little bit further down for the Kings on the pecking order, and maybe someone that wasn't going to fit. So you're like, okay, him and our first, like, we're getting an 85 point scorer that we can inject right into our lineup. Like, it just, I think this is one of those deals that makes sense for both sides.
Frank, it's a week away from day one of the draft in Montreal. And we haven't heard anything Canucks-wise in terms of, like, actual decisions that they're going to make with their key players. Nothing on JT Miller, nothing on Bo Horvat, who are in the same contractual status, 1 year left before UFA. Nothing on Brock Besser, who is their biggest actual free agent. He's a restricted free agent. Are you hearing anything now?
Well, I could actually give you a little bit of a preview. I have my trade target story coming out on Daily Faceoff in the next few hours, and Brock Besser is going to be added to the list. And I don't think they're actively shopping Brock Besser. Like, I'm sure they're listening if someone wanted to, you know, really engage in conversation. But I think to this point, the negotiation has sort of, it's gone nowhere. They've gone back and forth, and I think the Canucks have made their case as to where they think Brock Besser is. The Besser camp is like, well, like, what's the plan here? What are we doing? Like, if you think that we're unreasonable and vice versa, like, why don't we either just do a, you know, do the 1 year qualifying offer and let's just get this over with, come back for 1 year at that number. Or if not, like, let's trade him. Like, let's move on. Like, if you don't think that Brock Besser is a fit for your team and you're not sold on him being a long-term part of your team, or even at a term that makes sort of everyone comfortable and gives security, like, why continue to go around and around in circles? So I think that's where things stand at the moment. Part of it, I think, is, you know, is obviously when you take a look at and he obviously rebounded well, but you take a look at last season and you're like, okay, a bit of a disappointment. I think the Besser camp, with all that he went through with, you know, his dad passing away and what that's like going through the season, Jim Rutherford acknowledged that, you know, certainly was difficult to deal with and manage, that they think he's going to come back and, you know, sort of be free in a sense, that he can get back to being the player that we all thought he might be in terms of putting the puck in the net. So I don't know, you know, I don't know where they go from here. Like, it's one of those things, like, if, you know, I kind of used the same analogy with Johnny Gaudreau and the Calgary Flames. As they've gotten to this point where they've made their pitch to Johnny and he hasn't given them an answer, it's kind of like in any relationship, like, what are we doing here? Are we getting married or not? And if not, that's fine. But, like, let's just get ourselves in a spot where we can all understand that.
And there is a deadline of sorts for the Brock Besser situation, and that is July 11th when qualifying offers are due. So there's a lot of dates for hockey fans to keep in mind. July 7th and 8th is the draft. July 11th, deadline for qualifying offers. July 13th is unrestricted or free agency, when free agents can start to sign. Speaking of free agents,
it'd be silly not to qualify him, right?
Rutherford has ruled that out publicly, at least. He said, we're not going to do that. We're not going to let him walk away. This is like the right, Canucks have so... seen a couple of those guys walk away, like Ben Hutton and Troy Stetcher. They're not going to do that with Brock Besser, according to Jim Rutherford.
So it makes all the sense in the world. It, you know, issue the qualifying offer, and if he accepts it, well, then you're going to have your answer in terms of where things are heading.
Yeah.
Seems like a 1 year. And frankly, that's actually, speaking of Fiala, that's the spot that Fiala was in last year. They were able to come to terms on a 1 year deal and then got through the year. He had a fantastic season, and then they kind of just shook hands and parted ways, partly because Fiala outplayed the deal and they couldn't afford him, but also, like, there was a lot of tension there that existed between the Wild and Fiala. It was like he wanted to get paid on a long-term deal, and the Wild were like, we're not doing it.
Well, and the good news for the Wild and all that is Fiala did have that good year, so he had more interest in him league-wide, to the point that the Kings were able to you know, justify giving up a pretty good return for him. So that could be the hope and prayer. It's not even a prayer, because Brock Besser's a good player. That could end up playing out in Vancouver. I'm really curious about Pittsburgh right now, Frank, and what's happening right now. We played some Brian Burke audio, who was on with Jeff Merrick, and he was basically, you know, he was given the Brian Burke routine, where it's like, well, where are they going to sign him to a deal that makes sense for us, or we're going to trade, or they're not going to not trade him, or they're not going to be Pittsburgh Penguins anymore. He seemed to suggest that Chris Letang was the priority, and then after that, it would be Evgeny Malkin. But I guess my big question would be, if the Penguins don't re-sign Malkin or Letang, what's the plan there?
Well, on the back end with Letang, that's why he's their priority. It's so much more difficult to replace him. Like, to get a guy that chews up that kind of minutes and pretty reliably puts up 60 points every year from your blue line, like, that's... they've really made him the focal point. Like, he's the guy they're trying to get done first, and then they're trying to see how much of the pie is left over to give to Evgeny Malkin. And probably an uncomfortable spot to be in for a Hart and Conn Smythe Trophy winner in Malkin, but it sort of is what it is at this point with his injuries and basically how unreliable his body has been. When he's been in the lineup, he's been great, but he's also missed a ton of time over the last number of years just trying to stay upright. So with Letang, like it's a term issue. I reported, you know, way back in February or March before the deadline, he was asking for a 5-year deal. My understanding is that they've given him a 4-year offer. I don't know if they'll eventually move to the 5, but you know, it's also at a pretty healthy number for a guy that, you know, is getting up there in age in Letang. You know, you look at his production and it's been great, but he's still 35. 5-year deal puts him past his 40th birthday. So that's a significant consideration. And yeah, what's the plan if you're not able to keep him? I think they've engaged in some conversation with the Montreal Canadiens about Jeff Petrie as someone that would be a pretty decent backup fit. Obviously not the same type of production, and certainly dropped off a bit for Petrie last year with all that was going on and that sort of trade request pending and his family situation, which made it really difficult. But if you're able to get him maybe at a little bit of a retained salary transaction number, $1 million off or $1.5 million off from the Montreal Canadiens, maybe that makes some sense for you and you're able to trade back another player. So that's, you know, that's sort of where things stand on the back end. How do you replace Evgeny Malkin up front if they don't bring him back? Well, my guess is if they're not bringing Letang back, which I still think they end up getting it done, that you then can find the room you need to keep Malkin and then you find a replacement on the back end.
Which teams might be interested in an Evgeny Malkin, who's going to be 36 in July, but still a pretty good player when he's healthy?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Like when you look at teams down the middle, like who stands out for you in terms of, you know, bringing in one of those fits. I wonder about a team like, I don't know, just to throw it out there, this is pure speculation on my part. What about a team like the New York Rangers? They've got a ton of talent, and a lot of it is sort of centered on their wings. When Ryan Strome, it sounds like he's leaving, is going to market, that there's an opening there to pay someone. I don't know what kind of number Malkin would be looking at. I think they sort of originally in the last 10 to 12 months were thinking like, hey, why don't we go after the, I don't know, Nicholas Backstrom type deal, 9.2 million times 5 or whatever that ended up being at the time. And then you see Malkin season, you're like, okay, he's not going to get there, but what is he comfortable with? What, you know, what makes, and he had one of the quotes of the year, "I very rich man." You know, what makes him, having earned $100 million plus to this point, what gets him excited? So that's part of it. I still think, you know, if I'm looking in my crystal ball and if you put a gun to my head and took me to a Vegas betting window, mm-hmm. I would be betting on both those players staying in Pittsburgh. But, you know, it's getting dicey. We're 13 days away.
Well, I hope it doesn't get to that point, Frank, where we have to take a gun to you.
You know, perhaps fitting here, maybe we could play a little Russian roulette.
We're speaking of Frank Saravalli.
It's just got real dark. Frank, for God's sake.
It is silly season. We're speaking to Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Frank, I want to turn our attention to the Nashville Predators and Philip Forsberg. What's the latest on this situation?
To my knowledge, not close. They've been in constant dialogue and communication. They got to a point over the last week to 10 days, sort of around, trying to think when I reported that, right around NHL awards last week, that look, the Preds see the writing on the wall that they are probably unable to come to terms on a new deal for Forsberg. It's not just dollars. It's also structure, signing bonus, you know, no trade, no move. Like, they don't hand a lot of those things out in Nashville. You know, the first player to get it was Pekka Rinne, and the second was Roman Josi. That's it in the entire 16-17 year CBA that have gotten those types of deals from David Poile and the Nashville Predators. They don't seem willing to bend on money or term or the structure of it. So they're kind of spinning their wheels, And the sense is now that Philip Forsberg is going to market, subject to change, of course, over the next 13 days. But that's sort of where things are at the moment. And they've begun to, at least internally, explore what those options are to try and replace him. And I guess the answer to that is good luck. I mean, you don't find a 40-goal play-driving winger on the market. Like, those guys are really hard to find.
Finally, before we let you go, I do want to focus on Chicago for a minute here. So Kyle Davidson met with the media yesterday. I'll frame this as accurately as I can. They're not ruling out the possibility of trading DeBrincat, who's been on your and a bunch of other draft boards for an awfully long time. They are ready to listen to offers, given that the rebuild is pretty much underway and will continue. And then he alluded to some of the guys that were untouchables because of their contract status. I want to focus on Patrick Kane here, because we were kind of throwing around the fantasy hockey angle to this from a sense of, if you were to be able to make a trade or swing a trade or get him to waive, he would be such an intriguing add with 1 year left on his deal, with the caliber of player that he is and how motivated he might be to go somewhere to try and win again after a lot of losing in Chicago. Is there anything to this, or is this just me spitballing, hoping that it might happen?
I don't know if it's just you spitballing. I think a lot of people have been trying to connect those dots. And I think my sense of it, where the Blackhawks have left things with Kane and with Taves, is you're under contract. You're a pillar of our organization and have been. Your jersey's going to be hanging in the rafters someday. We are not asking you to waive your no move clause in order to send you somewhere. If you want to come to us and tell us that you don't want to do this anymore and you want out, well, then that's a different story. And then we could engage in those conversations. To my knowledge, that has not happened. I wonder what a potential Alex DeBrincat trade, which it's happening. Like, it's the question of, is it now or is it before the trade deadline? What does that do for Patrick Kane? Like, DeBrincat has been such a big part of these last few years and what, you know, how productive they've both been together. If you're moving on from him, does that sort of hasten the conversation for Patrick Kane? Does it not matter? Like, is he sort of also hinted at the idea of wanting to see through this rebuild to the other side. And, like, God bless him, he's one of those guys that's actually able to, he has the talent, has the ability. Like, he could be a really productive player in this league at age 40. So he has the capability to see it through to the other side. It's a lot of losing in between, because they didn't even really, as tough as the last few seasons have been, they haven't begun to tear it down yet. So they're in that spot now where it's like, well, what do we do? And they've made it clear that they're not going to be asking.
Frank, this was great, man. Really good insight on everything that's going on around the NHL. Thank you a lot for doing it. Enjoy the long weekend in the next little bit. We'll do this again next Thursday, which will be our NHL draft preview hit.
Have a great Canada Day, guys.
Thanks, Frank. Appreciate it. That's Frank Saravalli here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Couple quick notes to pass along your way. Craig Anderson, still doing the business. The Buffalo Sabres just announced they're bringing him back for what I believe is his 56th consecutive NHL campaign. How does that make you feel as a goalie guy, that Craig Anderson's been able to hang around for so long?
It's a wonder how his hips are still in one piece.
Yeah, it's, I mean, good for him that he's able to still do this, because it's wild that his career has spanned two decades now and he's still able to play at the NHL level. Interestingly enough, Bruce Garriock out of Ottawa announces that the Ottawa Senators are not going to make a qualifying offer to Adam Gaudette. And I mean, Adam Gaudette, the former Vancouver Canuck, is headed to unrestricted free agency. We got a lot more to get to on the Halford and Brough Show.
He's headed to not the NHL.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Probably not, I would say. I feel like maybe he's got one more kick at the can. You know?
I mean, maybe there's so many, there's going to be some bad teams next year. Like, we just talked about Chicago.
Yeah.
They could be awful next year. Arizona's obviously going to be awful.
I don't think Chicago's going to go down the Gaudette road again, but another team for sure.
No, yeah, but I'm just talking about the amount of bad teams that are going to be out there that could be willing to give guys a shot. And they're like, to be perfectly honest with you, if you're not very good, that's actually good for us, because we're in the Connor Bedard sweepstakes now.
Coming up on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, 7 o'clock hour, we're going to be joined by Stacey Byram. If that surname is familiar to you, that's because that's Bo Byram's mom. We're going to talk to her about her son's recovery from concussion and vertigo problems last season. And then, of course, the fact that her son is now a Stanley Cup champion. That's all coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.